So I guess I should do the usual thanks to the organizing committee for inviting me to speak. Of course, I did invite the organizing set up the organizing committee in the first place, but not for this. So I get punished twice. Anyway, so what I want to talk about is a little bit outside of the mainstream of Galois representations in this conference. Of course, the Chamorro varieties do play a role, and they'll even be for unitary groups, as you'll see. So what I decided to do, in view of the other talks that have occurred before, which have a nice bit of an overview feeling, at least some of them do, and I think intentionally so, was to try to give a little background as to where this subject is supposed to sit. And so this talk now has two introductions, so I added another introduction. So so let's go to the preliminary remarks, which is the first introduction. And so I want to put this in a little bit of a historical context, at least from my point of view. So as it says here, back in the early days when the Langlands program was just emerging, say at Corvallis, there was a technique called the theta correspondence, which of course still exists today in some remote parts of the north and elsewhere. But it was pioneered by Roger Howe and Steve Rollis, Pietetsky Shapiro, and so on. And what it was really good for was it was a wonderful source, as explained here, of examples and counterexamples. At that time, as people went from GL2 to higher rank groups, it was not so easy to write down or have in your hands automorphic forms with various properties. And so, for example, one thing that people believed, at least initially and for a short period of time, is they believed that the Ramanujan conjecture was true. They realized that there was a notion of tempered representations, and you had some factorization into local components, and then everybody believed that on the basis of what was true for GL2, that there would be the Ramanujan conjecture in general. So anyway, the basic setup for the theta correspondence, let me begin with that, just to set the stage. The idea, this is due to Roger Howe, the fundamental idea is that of a dual reductive pair. So this is simply a pair of subgroups inside of a given symplectic group. So G and G prime are both subgroups of some symplectic group. They're reductive groups, and they're mutual commutants, which means that each one is the centralizer in the symplectic group of the other. And so this would be a dual reductive pair. As I said, they're reductive groups, hence the reductive. And so you can imagine that this is rather similar to the situation for central simple algebras, when you have mutual commuting central simple algebras. In any case, and that's part of the philosophy behind it, in fact. So typical examples of these things would be that you get your ambient symplectic vector space by tensoring two spaces with forms. So you could take, in the sort of simplest case, a symplectic space and a symmetric space and just tensor over the ground field and then take the tensor product of the two forms. This is now alternating. Or you could take Hermitian and skew Hermitian, and once again you'll get a commuting pair of subgroups this way as the unitary groups or symplectic groups in these two cases. So the first case here would give SPO as a dual pair, and the second case a pair of unitary groups. Of course, there's a skew Hermitian, but that's just okay. So this is typically how these things arise. And then the idea is that using Vey's formalism about the theta function, so we imagine we're doing this over a global field, you can construct, using the theory of theta functions, these theta kernels, which are depending on some Schwarz function. I'm putting this in here just for sort of historical color. I won't explain anything about it. But these are functions on the pair of groups which are invariant under the rational points. They're not quite automorphic. They don't have a central character, for example, or they're not killed by an ideal in the enveloping algebra. But in any case, you can use these things as integral kernels. If you have a cusp form, for example, on this group, you can integrate against G and get an automorphic form on the other group. So you can use these things to transfer automorphic forms and automorphic representations from between the two groups. And so typically, if you started with an automorphic representation of the group G, let's say cuspidal, so that all the integrals I'm about to write down would converge, you would take an element in that space of cusp forms, an element in pi, and you would form the theta integral, which would mean that you would simply integrate out the variable G against this kernel, which is constructed using theta functions, and you get a function of G prime, depending on the initial f and the initial phi. As you vary the f and phi, phi is all the possibilities, which I'm not discussing, and f runs over this cusp form, the space of the cusp form pi, you get another space of functions on the group G prime, and in certain favorable situations, that might also be a cuspidal automorphic representation, or maybe not cuspidal, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of theory is built up to try to describe how this correspondence between representations goes, and this would be then the global theta correspondence. So, as an application of this machinery, for example, at about the time of Corvallis, Howe and Pietetsky Shapiro used the dual pair O and SP, this has rank 2, so 4 is the size of the matrices. They transferred from O2 to SP4 using the dual pair that I explained a moment ago, and the same procedure, and they constructed on SP4 or GSP4 with a little more work, a non-tempered cuspidal automorphic forms. So these were the first examples, counterexamples for monogen. They were constructed by using this technology. Similarly, in some old work that I did with Milson, it's not similar exactly, but in others, in keeping with the history I'm discussing here, we constructed what we call geometric theta series. So what I'm also illustrating here is sort of a hierarchy of the theory of theta functions, where we elevate them from the most direct theta kernels that we had in the previous slide, which were used here, for example, where you just want a cusp form on here. Milson and I constructed theta kernels, which are actually still automorphic forms with respect to the variable g, but they're all now what's happening is with respect to the second group, they're going to be differential forms. So it takes values in, if you like, the Durham complex. So here are the dual pairs we considered. We supposed, again, it's the SPO type situation, although this is tensoring over a quaternion algebra. And so this is the group where the geometry will go on, classical group of signature of a symmetric Hermitian or symplectic Hermitian form of some given signature. X is the locally symmetric space attached to that, or more precisely here, it will be a locally symmetric space, I mean, that I get by modding out the symmetric space for this group here by a discrete arithmetic group. And so what we found in this way was we constructed theta functions here, which were valued in the Durham complex of this locally symmetric space X. When you pass through their cohomology class, you then get automorphic forms of the variable G value with values in the cohomology groups of the variety. And in this way, again, by integrating out the variable G, you can produce a relation between certain cusp forms or automorphic forms on this first group and certain space subspaces of cohomology on the second group. And this is an interesting procedure. And in particular, what's also true is that usually the automorphic representations that you get here, there's some, this procedure that Milson and I did is directly linked to to cycles, Riemannian locally symmetric subspaces of the space X. And so there's a direct connection with the geometry of some kind of subspaces. It can be done more generally, of course. And so again, this is, then the theta machinery provides a way of going from a relation between the cohomology of X here and automorphic forms on the other group G. And so the idea now is to elevate this one more step, or to generalize this, or make it more exotic in one more stage. And that is, let's suppose we're going to start with now a Shimura variety, some Shimura variety XXK and so on. Let's say it's smooth and projective, just for simplicity, and over the reflex field E, etc. And now, instead of looking at the cohomology of X, you could ask for this smooth projective variety over a number field, you could look at its Chow groups. So recall that the Chow group of the Arth Chow group is gotten by taking algebraic cycles of codimension R inside of X. We take combinations of them, linear combinations, which is rational over E, which simply means we have some Galois invariance of the combination. So you can well imagine that you could have a rational zero cycle without the individual points being rational. So that's similar here. So these would be the algebraic cycles of codimension R, and the Chow group is simply the quotient of that by the equivalence relation, which is rational equivalence. Now, if you took zero cycles on a curve, what you would get here would be pick, and if you took pick zero, which is to say the ones which are trivial in homology, the trivial image in homology, you'd just get the rational points on the Jacobian of that curve. And of course, that's an interesting group. Its rank is a very, for modular curves, is a very great interest. So anyway, you could consider that for much more general Shimura varieties, and so I think it's an interesting question. Of course, you can again take limits over K and get modules out of these things on which the GAF is acting. Their cohomology is extremely mysterious, or their dimensions, rather, is extremely mysterious, even more so than cohomology. And in fact, in general, we have to admit that we don't even know the finite generation. Mordell-Weil theorem isn't known, so this is very speculative at this level. But the basic idea, not daunted by any of these kind of realistic facts, it's a tradition in mathematics, I think, is to construct some kind of a notion of arithmetic theta series, which by analogy with the old work with Milson that I mentioned earlier, would be theta functions of the one group G, which is staying put here, and now, but now valued in the Chow group. And so the goal then would be to try to use these theta functions, these arithmetic theta functions, to get some kind of sort of a link between automorphic representations of this group G and these Mordell-Weil spaces, that is to say, representations of G prime AF occurring in the Mordell-Weil spaces, here. And so the vanishing or non-vanishing of these kind of arithmetic theta lifts is expected to be controlled by L functions and their derivatives, and in the Gross-Auger formula can be viewed as an example of this type of phenomena by a certain, I mean, if you look at the proof of a certain, in a certain style. So this is the kind of thing one would like to do. So all of this is the first introduction, and so what I'm really trying to motivate here is that I think it's an interesting problem to try to construct these arithmetic theta series. And so the point is going to be that these are going to try to be some kind of, well, initially there'll be some sort of generating function, just in with classical theta series, the most classical ones. You start with a lattice, and you take lattice points of a given length, and you look at the number of them, and then you count them, and you make a generating series. And in the end, when you make a Q expansion, it's a modular form, and you can get all kinds of great facts out of that. And we're really in the rather crude stage, we're doing something very analogous, where we're taking certain algebraic cycles on Shimura varieties and making, it's like lattice point counting, except now the count, the number of such things will be a point in a Chow group or an arithmetic Chow group, and a Q expansion, we dream, will be a modular form. So that's the philosophy behind this. So now I'm going to start the introduction. This was the first introduction, but trying to set this in some kind of a context with respect to work going on about cohomology of Shimura varieties, that this is some sort of related idea. But I also brought in the ancient history of the Ramanujan conjecture and Howe, Pitesky, Shapiro to say that we're in a very, very rudimentary stage here. We're nowhere near the point where we can describe exactly how the endoscopic contribution looks inside of the whatever. I mean, it's not going to happen anytime soon. So the point now is to try to construct arithmetic theta functions for unitary Shimura varieties. And there are going to be several topics in this talk. The first one is to construct the special cycles that are going to be involved. These will frequently be cycles in the integral models. So just as with the Galois representations, it may be, you look at the cohomology of these rational, these varieties defined over the number field E, but it's frequently true if you want to know any of their arithmetic properties, you have to pass to the integral model and do more delicate calculations. And there's a similar thing that goes on here. You may want the Chow groups of the generic fiber, but in the long run, you're at least where we know how to do calculations is when you take the integral model and try to deal with more delicate calculations. So there's construction of special cycles, then a generating function of them, and then finally speculations about the modular properties of these generating functions, that is to say that these theta series are supposed to be automorphic forms of some sort, and some results and evidence in favor of these speculations. So now most of the first two sections of this talk is joint work with Michael Rappaport, a long project we've done on unitary groups. And the latter parts, I'll include some of the results with Rappaport, but also some results of other people more recently. So let's begin now with the basic moduli problem, which is by now very familiar here, but we're doing it a little bit without a group, at least initially. So we're starting with an imaginary quadratic field, ring of integers OK, and we let M be the moduli space over spec OK of collections A, E, Iota, Lambda. So as always, A is an abelian scheme over some base S. Iota is an action of OK on that scheme, and lambda is a principal polarization. Notice that I'm assuming it's principal. And we're taking this up to isomorphism. We're not taking this polarization. It's not a Q polarization or that sort of thing. That's just a principal polarization where the Rosati is compatible with the polarization. And we have a signature condition, Kottwitz condition. In this case, the signature is N minus 1, 1. So one copy of the conjugate action and on the Lie algebra and N minus 1 copies of the usual one, and this is an identity of polynomials with values in the in OS under the structure morphism. So this is the basic moduli problem, and now this abelian variety, notice, has relative dimension N over S. That's useful to notice. And now I want to mention a little bit about how this is... only if I have some technical help. That was my goal, but I don't know. I don't know how to do it from here. So, okay. Somebody wants to come help. All right. So this is our basic moduli space. Notice there was no group mentioned here, but in fact, there's only a finite. This is a union of a finite number of Shimura varieties. If you look at the generic fiber, so let me mention how it's related to classical ball quotients, just to make this concrete. But also, the Green's functions will come in a little bit later, so it's nice to mention this. So if you look at the complex points, if you have a complex abelian variety of this type, you can look at the lattice, the H1 of this complex abelian variety, which is now an OK lattice via iota, and it has on it a unimodular Hermitian form, which you can build out of the usual Riemann form on the lattice. So to each point in this moduli space, you get a unimodular Hermitian lattice. So, and this is the definition of the Hermitian form in terms of the Riemann form sharp brackets. And now the Lie algebra of A is really just the, sorry, we can think of this as the Lie algebra. If I tensor with R, I get the Lie algebra. Notice this side has a complex structure. And so this space here gets a complex structure each time this occurs. And it, that has a positive definite Hermitian form coming from the J, which is a complex structure, a natural complex structure on the tangent space of the complex abelian variety. And so now the idea is that by the signature condition, if I look at the action of this element of the field tensor R and the element of JA of the complex structure coming from the abelian complex abelian variety, these two guys differ on a line. The point is that the signature condition means that the Hermitian form with respect to this complex structure, which is the one we're using on this space, some fixed space now, has signature n minus 1, 1, whereas, of course, for J, it's positive definite because it's a polarization. So the two differ on a line, and it's a line in this space. So, and it's a line which now can be viewed as a negative line with respect to the Hermitian form with respect to the field K. And so in that way, what happens is you get a negative line in each of these spaces here. And now this gives a complex uniformization. Namely, you choose a lattice L in each isometry class of unimodular Hermitian lattices, positive signature N1 Hermitian lattices over the field K. You choose one lattice in each isometry class of such lattices. Then this lattice here will, of course, be isometric one of them. So you choose an isometry of this lattice with that guy. That transfers this line into the space of negative lines in that particular this space. You therefore get a map from this abelian variety. You get a point in this symmetric space, this n ball, which is the negative lines for this particular lattice. And of course, the choice of isomorphism between this lattice here and the lattice L, the two such choices, this is supposed to be an isomorphism or Hermitian spaces, they differ precisely by an element of the isometry group. And so you get exactly this complex uniformization. That's the proof of complex uniformization in this case. So you see that these are just the unions of ball quotients. And you see also that if you took the corresponding Hermitian vector spaces, you would divide this up into a finite number of Shimura varieties attached to those various Hermitian forms. So now to get arithmetic cycles, and this is part of the reason I went through this in some detail, what we do is we consider, of course, Milson and I had also considered cycles, I should say, in these locally symmetric spaces. And we did it by some description directly in the ball quotient B. But now one of the things that Rappaport and I found was a nice modular definition of these same cycles that we'd already seen, I'd already seen with Milson in the complex geometry situation. So the idea is that I look at the analogous space with signature 1, 0. Of course, that's not one of our spaces. Well, it's one of our spaces when I take n equals, well, it's not because I had n minus 1, 1, so you have to switch here. In any case, this space is going to be simply the space of CM elliptic curves with CM by OK. So moduli stack of CM elliptic curves with CM by OK. And so typically such a thing as a principal polarization, an action, et cetera, over base S. And so we're going to define our cycle as some locus living over this product of these two things. So there's this kind of placebo space, which is just a zero-dimensional scheme that we're zero-dimensional on the generic fiber, zero-dimensional generic fiber. We're going to take a product of our given M from before with that guy. So now, if I have a point in M0S cross MS, so that is to say an E with equipment and A with equipment, we can consider the OK linear homomorphisms from E to A. And this is certainly an OK module, but it has a canonical Hermitian form. This is what's nice, coming from the polarizations. Namely, if you have two endomorphisms, I could draw the little diagram here, the map which sends X, so I've gone from E to A, then lambda, which takes you from A to A dual, then Y check, which takes you from A dual, you're supposed to imagine where the dot is, back to E check, and then lambda E inverse, which goes back, and its principal polarization, you come back to E, you get an endomorphism of E, but it's OK linear. And the OK linear endomorphisms of a CM thing like this is just OK, it's its own commutant. And so you get an element, you could take iota E inverse if you wanted to be really pedantic about it. So this is a natural, OK-valued Hermitian form. You can check its Hermitian by the polarization condition. And so what you do is you look at the collection of triples, where now you have a pair, as on the previous slide, together with a homomorphism X, such that its value under the Hermitian form is a given integer T. This form, by the way, on here is positive definite, as you can check easily. And so for every positive integer t, I can look at zt, which is the collection of such triples. This is now a functor. All these things are up to isomorphism. This is now a functor on the stack. And so you get something living over M0 cross M. Now, a little more generally, so these are the special cycles in question. A little more generally, you could take an R tuple for any R. If you took a target Hermitian matrix of size R, say positive definite, you could take an R tuple of such homomorphisms from E to A, and you could ask that their matrix of inner products is T. Now, if you went all the way up to R equals N, what you would really have is you'd have N copies of E and this abelian variety of dimension N, and I would call this thing then a calibrated isogeny. Namely, the T is kind of calibrating how the shape of this isogeny. Now, of course, what's actually true is that you can't do that because of the signature condition, because the tangent space action here and the tangent space action here are not totally compatible. One would be signature N0 and the other was signature N minus 1, 1. So, in any case, by this construction, you get a cycle which maps to M0 cross M. So these are the special cycles of interest. And notice that they're parameterized by these positive definite Hermitian matrices. Okay, so now let's look at the complex points for just a moment. If you want to look at the complex points in our complex uniformization, it comes out to be this. I won't belabor it. It's an amusing little exercise. What you end up with is the complex points for a single integer t. As you look at the union over all lattices, of course, the different pieces lie in the different pieces up above. And now for this particular piece, the cycle, the piece of the cycle living in here is just the union of x in the lattice L of length t modulo gamma L. So it's the gamma L orbits of vectors of length t in this lattice. So this feels very much like theta function, and this may not be disjoint. These actually can meet. And this dx is exactly the negative lines which are perpendicular to the given vector x, which is a positive vector. So this dx is therefore an n minus 2 ball. These were n minus 1 balls here. And for each vector x of this sort, so the main point is just that this t is positive, this dx will be an n minus 2 ball embedded. There are many, many, many of them in various different positions. And each one can be modded out by gamma x. And this thing is what you would get as a mapping to your cycle. Okay. These are the special cycles. Now, is this repeating? Right. Now here I'm doing just the parameterization in the general case of general t, and the point here is you just put a bold x and you just realize that this is now an n minus r minus 1 ball, where r is this number of conditions you impose. It goes down by 1 each time. Notice in particular, so if r equals n minus 1, which is the dimension of this thing dx as a complex thing. If you take that many of them, the dx is just a point. DL of x is simply a point, and this zt of c is a zero cycle on this Shamir variety. And moreover, as you can check, it's rational over the reflex field, which in this case is just the field k. So this gives you a supply of zero cycles. For example, you could be more audacious and try to take n of them. As I explained a moment ago, because of the tangent space conditions, if I take n of them, remember it's an n minus 1 ball, the answer will be empty on the generic fiber. There'll be no points in characteristic 0 because n copies of the elliptic curve, the tangent space has signature n 0, whereas the abelian variety A has signature n minus 1 0. So you can't make an isogeny, which is okay linear. But what happens now, interestingly enough, is that these cycles, forget about the C now, the ZTs are not empty on the integral model. And these are very interesting zero cycles, at least virtually, they ought to be zero cycles, on the integral model of the Shamir variety. So they have points in finite characteristic, as I'll explain in a little while. Okay, so now to go back a little bit to the preliminary remarks, part of the introduction. In the old work with Milson, what we considered is we chose an R between 1 and n minus 1. For each T of that rank, positive definite, you get a cohomology class of this corresponding cycle, which has codimension R, so you get a class in H2R of the variety. Here I'm not compactifying, so this is the absolute cohomology, just the cohomology of the open Shamir variety. And taking complex coefficients, not worrying about twists and so on and so forth. And so in any case, you make these cohomology classes. This is some finite dimensional complex vector space. And so you can form a generating series. Initially, you just take these classes and multiply by Q to the T. Well, what does that mean? We'll have to say here. And you sum them up, and that's the generating series. So now, first of all, what is Q to the T? So I should go to the next slide to say, so this, to say what Q to the T means, I took it off here, not cleverly. Usually, if I had the usual integer T, Q to the T would be a familiar thing. You take e to the 2 pi I and take it to the T's power, which is e to the 2 pi I T times tau. But here, T is a Hermitian matrix of size R, and so what you need to do is you need to take the corresponding symmetric space, which is the analog, I call this the genus R Hermitian space, Siegel space. So it's the analog of the usual Siegel space of genus R, except the tau is no longer required to be symmetric. And so when I take the imaginary part, I don't take tau minus tau bar, but tau minus transpose tau bar. So this is now viewed as the imaginary part, which is now a positive, it is required to be a positive definite Hermitian matrix of rank R. So this is the symmetric space for the group URR. In any case, the e to the 2 pi I now, Q to the T now means e to the 2 pi I trace of T tau. These are both Hermitian matrices or of some size. So you make this generating function. It's now a function on this space tau, HR, and the theorem, as I mentioned here, is that this thing turns out to be a Hermitian modular form. So this symmetric space we're looking at is for the group URR, which you'll remember from the preliminary introduction, is a group that would form a dual pair with my UN minus 1, 1. And so this is actually a modular form on URR valued in this cohomology group. And the weight is N, which is the dimension of the ambient vector space over here. And the genus R is just the size of this of T and so on. Now, notice in this sum that the T is greater than or equal to 0. In order to get this theorem to be true, you have to include singular coefficients, including, for example, T equals 0. And this is gotten by taking into account the class of the tautological bundle on the variety. So you use the cup product with the Kähler form a certain number of times to shift classes that occur in the wrong dimension. I won't go into that. Okay. So anyway, as I mentioned a moment ago, this, the relevant dual pair, according to the preliminary introduction, is U n minus 1, 1. That's the moduli space. And then the other group is U, R, R. And so this kind of theta series will relate the cohomology of U of this symmetric space in that degree 2R to automorphic forms on URR of a certain weight and so on. Okay. So now let's pass to the arithmetic case. So here I would like to do something analogous with these actual cycles ZT, which are defined in this moduli space. Here I'm ignoring M0, even though I made a big deal about it before, but just to keep things light, I'm going to ignore the M0, which is dimension. I mean, if you can ignore it. All right. So I want to do something similar with these ZTs, which are now cycles in this integral model, which is a scheme over spec OK, or OK rather. And so first of all, well, we didn't worry about it in the other case, but here I'll mention that there's a nice regular model of the compactification of this guy over spec OK. I just want to flag a nice paper, recent paper by Ben Howard, where he works out a really nice model where notice here that the ramified primes are possible, et cetera, et cetera. So this is really over spec OK. It's a nice thing, based on the work of many, many people, putting it all together. In any case, what we'd like to replace the cohomology groups is we're going to use here the arithmetic Chow groups. So we're going to use Chow groups, but this is the Gillet-Soulet Chow groups, where in addition to having a cycle of codimension R, which would be what you'd have for the usual Chow group, you have to equip it with a Green's function, or Green's current in this particular case. And in this, also in this particular case, because we've had to compactify, we want to use these Burgos, Kramer, Kuhn generalizations, which allow metrics to be singular at infinity on vector bundles and so on. So they allowed some singularities at infinity, some log-log singularities at infinity for the Green's currents and so on. And there's one additional feature here, which is the sub R, which means that before I form the equivalence classes, I tensor with R. So I don't want to tensor afterwards, because then you see horrible groups like the C infinity functions on a manifold tensor with R, where you view it as the Z module. Not very nice spaces. So these are better. You tensor with R before you take the equivalence for those classes. So in any case, what we like is some classes in these Chow groups, arithmetic Chow groups. And as I mentioned, this is a Green's current for the cycle. It's an RR current on, R minus 1, R minus 1 current. There's a sixth typo. You didn't notice the others, but it's okay. It's after lunch. It satisfies this Green's equation, which means I take ddc of the Green's current as a current, and get some smooth form, which is indeed now an RR form, unlike this, and the delta current along the cycle. And notice that there's a V here. This V is a positive definite Hermitian matrix of size R, which sounds familiar from earlier slides, and it should, because, okay, this is this auxiliary parameter, as I'm mentioning here, and now we're going to form a generating series out of these things. Now notice I've skipped, I said I would like, so I didn't say I have, so we're really in speculative land now. We would like to form a generating series out of them by multiplying by q to the t, same meaning as before. The v is now supposed to be the imaginary part of tau in this sense. So this parameter that goes into the Green's current, this is on based on experience that we would like to see that in as part of the Green's current. So the Green's current is linked to the variable here. And also there are terms here now for all t, not just positive semi-definite. So now the indefinite t, singular t, will all play a role in this thing, we expect. And we would like to speculate, as you see how wild this is at this point, that these things are some kind of non-holomorphic, because here's the v, Hermitian modular forms, genus R, weight n, valued in this arithmetic Chow group. Okay? So, of course, this is a wild speculation. Now, at least I can be precise about what I mean by this statement. At least at the moment, what I mean is that if you take any linear functional on this space, and you some nice linear functional, and you look at the image of this thing applied coefficient by coefficient to that, so this is now a complex power series, you'd like that to be the power series of a possibly non-holomorphic modular form in the usual sense. And so every time you see a functional on this space, you can check these sort of speculations by seeing whether or not, or you can claim you've got evidence for the speculations by applying the functional and seeing whether or not what you get is a modular form in the traditional sense. Okay, so obviously a great deal remains to be done here and to define the series. So for example, you have to define all the singular terms, the terms for indefinite metrics, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a huge order, and it's still work in progress, and it may be in progress for a long time. It's difficult to define these things in general. But what the most accessible cases are the case R equals 1, so this would be divisors, and the other extreme, which would be arithmetic zero cycles. Now notice that the zero cycles are defined in such a way that they're not flat. We're not taking a flat extension because, as I said, they have no points in characteristic 0. They have only points in characteristic P. And this is an essential part of the theory, that these things are all defined in a modular way. I'm never just taking something on a generic fire and closing it up. I'm always taking a modular definition so that when I take, for example, the intersection product of two such things, I'm just imposing more homomorphisms, and it's all very natural. So in any case, there are these two cases that are the most reasonable to consider. And in the second case, which looks like it might be the more difficult, which are these arithmetic zero cycles, we actually have a candidate for the target Hermitian form. In other words, there should be this guy here for R equals N should conjecturally be related to some sort of an Eisenstein series, or rather the central derivative of what I call an incoherent Eisenstein series. So there's even a conjecture for the target in this case, which is gives you much more testable things you can do. Okay, so now let's consider that zero-dimensional case, zero cycles. So I'm fixing, for example, just to get started, a positive definite Hermitian form over OK. And so now the expected dimension of this thing, if you look what happens on the generic fiber, each time I impose another condition, it goes down, dimension goes down by one. When I hit n minus one of them, I have a zero cycle on the generic fiber. And when I apply n of them, I should get a zero cycle on the whole scheme. And so the expected dimension in that sense of this thing is zero. I like to call this maybe a virtual zero cycle. And this kind of thing comes up in Gromov-Witten theory as well, where they postulate the dimension of certain moduli spaces. Something should be zero dimensional. They should count something. But it's not, and then there's a big deal about making these some regularization. So the same thing happens here. As I said, this is often false, so these things usually aren't zero-dimensional, in many cases where they're not. So the first thing that Rappaport and I succeeded in doing is I already explained why this is true. The generic fiber of such a thing is empty. So either the cycle is empty, or it's supported in the fiber at one given prime P. Now, there's a slight lie here in the sense that I've now, in some sense, fixed the ambient Hermitian space over the rationals, so not one lattice, but a little finite set of lattices, et cetera, but roughly speaking, this is the right picture. So it's supported in a single fiber P, which can be easily determined, by the way, by T. I don't have time to explain it. It's a non-split prime, so it's either ramified or inert, and moreover, the locus is inside the supersingular locus of the fiber of P. So those are things you can show. And now the next thing is that in the inert case, where we have a good understanding of this supersingular locus, for example, we actually characterize when this VT is a zero cycle. So as I said, it's a virtual zero cycle. We expect the dimension to be zero, but it isn't always. And so the point is, you consider this Hermitian form in the completion of OK at P, which remember is inert. There, of course, it's since we're also assuming that, say, P is not 2, that might be good. In that case, it's integrally diagonalizable. All right, so remember, P is odd and inert. So you can, it's similar over GLN OK P to a diagonal form. And in order to get a zero, you get a zero cycle if and only if the diagonal has only 2 non-unit entries. So it's a 1 of this size and then 2 numbers A and B, which where we may as well assume that A is less than or equal to B, and that's the condition for it to be a zero cycle. So often it's not, in other words. There's excess dimension. And in this case, where all these good things happen, so this thing is positive definite, this unique prime is, well, either it's empty, that's good, or P is inert, and we have T in this good form, we call that a good T. And now the second part of the theorem is that when T is good, we can actually calculate the arithmetic degree of these things. Now, I should have said that the linear functional we're going to take on this top dimensional Chow group, this is the top Chow group, it's like the top degree in cohomology, it, especially once we tensor with R in the early going, there's just an isomorphism of this thing with R or C, depending on how much you've complexified. So this is just the top degree piece. And so the functional is just take the degree, but if you wanted. So what happens now is we can define a cycle by taking ZT with 0. There's no Green's current condition because there are no points on the generic fiber. So the Green's function could be completely ignored. Green's current can be ignored. That defines a good class in this Chow group. The arithmetic degree, which is to say the degree function, the top degree isomorphism on here, applied to this class in here, is also the arithmetic degree of this thing, and it factors. So what happens is the official definition of the arithmetic degree is this is some little Artin scheme now. And so you take the Artin ring, of which it is spec, and you take log of the absolute value of that Artin ring. That's the degree. So it's log p times the length, right? But what happens in this particular case is that this factors. So the support of this thing is some finite number of points in characteristic p, and each point has some thickening, some length of the local ring attached to that particular point. And it turns out that all the points have the same length. In other words, that there's two separate problems here. It separates. It's not like you have to calculate the length of the local ring at each point. You just count the number of points and multiply by the length. So all the lengths are the same of the individual points. So this is a local multiplicity times the number of points. So that's the first nice feature here. And now there's an explicit formula for the length, which has gotten out of deformation theory of the p-divisible groups. It's a very pleasant formula like this in terms of the A and B, which were the diagonal exponents for the matrix T. And what's true is that you can count points and actually compute this number, and as you can find some formula for the number of points, times this multiplicity, therefore. And now what happens is that you can make this, say, partial generating function. So here partial just means that I've summed over the good t's where I know what the value of this thing here, times q to the t. You can make this little piece of the generating function you'd like to define. And it is part of the q expansion of a non-holomorphic Hermitian modular form of genus n and weight n. That's the theorem. But it's not part of just any old modular form of genus n and weight n. It's not some abstract theorem, but it's the part of the Fourier expansion of a specific modular form. Namely, there's an Eisenstein series. So as usual, it's gotten by taking gamma mod gamma infinity. The URR has got the usual block form, A, B, C, D, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got C tau plus D to the minus M. That gives you the usual weight. There's some factor depending on the gamma here, which is some Gauss sum type thing, typical Eisenstein series. This doesn't converge. This only converges for real part of S greater than or equal to N, meaning that I did have to put in this factor here to get convergence. This is normalized in the style of Langlands so that the functional equation relates S and minus S. And N is the edge of is the row. It's the edge of the critical strip. And so this converges up to the edge of the critical strip. However, it's set up in such a way that it has a functional equation with a minus sign. It's self-dual. It's equal to itself, its own reflection, but it comes back to itself with a minus sign. And so it vanishes at S equals 0, the center of the critical strip. And this is this so-called incoherence condition. And so it's natural to look at the derivative, and the amazing thing, at least I find, even after working on it for many years, is that the central derivative of this thing is that partial Fourier expansion plus the terms for other t's, where now the obvious job is to say, well, look, there's your modular form, Hermitian modular form of weight n genus n, and here are the Fourier coefficients matching, except now the question is calculate the other coefficients and define them geometrically. In other words, find some geometric meaning that they may have. And so that's part of the problem. We need to do that. Of course, you'd like to find it in not an ad hoc way, but just defining it to be those numbers, I mean, somehow stuck in some bogus way, but you really like to define it correctly. So we'd like a modular definition, et cetera. But anyway, I want to illustrate what happens when you have the bad t. In other words, one set of t that you still need to account for in this business here are the t which are positive definite in this sense that we had here, but not necessarily good. In other words, where the intersection is not a zero cycle, but it's a big blob, even though it ought to be a zero cycle. And this can definitely happen, as we indicated with the criterion. So anytime you have high divisibility by p, you're going to get a blob. All right. So what happens then is that at least we can use p-adic uniformization, and you get the following conjecture. So the point is, we take one of these guys where this thing is what I call a virtual zero cycle, and we claim that the arithmetic degree of this thing, now it has to be correctly defined, is the number of components of it times some multiplicity. In other words, again, this should factor into a contribution, which is a counting of the number of components times a multiplicity for each of these components. And so, in fact, what one would like to have as an image here is that this is some sort of orbital integral, this piece, and this is some sort of twisted arithmetic orbital integral. And I think in the theory of the arithmetic relative trace formula, that's the kind of phenomena one sees. So it's the same kind of factorization occurring here. And we like to claim that this local multiplicity, well, this is the definition of the local multiplicity. What you do is you choose a collection x1 through xn of elements. And now I won't describe how this works exactly. This is going on inside of the symmetric space, which is uniformizing the supersingular locus. So this is the Rappaport-Zink space in question. And there's a definition of cycles quite analogous to the ones we've defined globally, which occurs inside the supersingular locus. And they'll be attached to an n-tuple of something, which I didn't quite mention, in terms of the p-divisible groups. And so you choose an n-tuple. Each one of them gives rise to a divisor inside of this Rappaport-Zink space. And you take the structure sheaf of each of those inside of here and take this class in the as a derived tensor product. And that its Euler characteristic is the multiplicity that you want. So this is Sayre's Tor formula, honestly. Right? So there's a Tor formula that should give the intersection multiplicity in general, and it takes place in this in the Rappaport-Zink space. So now what you would like to claim is that, moreover, this multiplicity, which is defined in this way, this is a geometric definition, which I said we would like to have for the missing coefficients. We wanted a geometric definition. So this is the geometric definition, except I'm not using a fact here about it factoring like this. In any case, the second part of the claim, as the conjecture, is that this multiplicity defined in this way is some innocuous constant. It's a ratio of volumes of compact opens on different groups, times a derivative of representation densities. Now, I'm not going to go into that, but this is the derivative of some Whitaker function at zero, roughly speaking. So I'm not going to try to explain that in any detail at all. But there's an explicit, this is separate from this. In other words, this has a geometric definition. This is what would come out of the Eisenstein series corresponding coefficient. And in order to get the matching that we want, we would need to show this identity here plus the suitable identity among counting of the points to get the correct global quantity here occurring in the Fourier coefficient. So now Ulrich Tostiga, a couple of years ago now, considered the case of n equals 3. So he took a positive definite thing of size 3, which he assumes has this form, p to the a, p to the b, p to the c. Now notice if a isn't 0, this is going to give us something will not be a zero cycle because it will contradict our criterion for, won't satisfy the criterion for a zero cycle. So as soon as a is bigger than 0, it will be a blob of some sort. And so then what he found was that the multiplicity is given this by this definition is given by the following lovely formula. It got a little more complicated, and it took many, many, many pages to derive this formula. It's not an easy thing at all, as you can imagine. But beautifully enough, what's true is that indeed this is equal to c prime times this derivative of representation density. As I said, this is a derivative of a Whitaker function. It's defined on the automorphic side of the game. So indeed, you have this matching for n equals 3 for these other coefficients. And he also did the counting so that in the end, if you take the n equals 3 incoherent Eisenstein series, you can expand the notion of good in this partial to include all positive definite t. provided the P, I should have mentioned, is unramified, inert. The ramified primes remain to be done. So there's some ramified bad guys where we don't know what happens. So this is still isn't quite all positive definite T's. Yeah. I've forgotten them. I mean, yeah, you just insert them. You're computing a length. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So the point is, in the derivative of the Eisenstein series, you definitely see a log P. So there's definitely one here, and you know, yeah. In the previous formula where it was all counting, I was getting an integer. I didn't see a log P. Right. So that's the length you're calculating. Okay. So in any case, this shows that in this particular case, things got even better, and it shows more evidence for the fact that these things may indeed be Hermitian modular forms, as we're sort of speculating. I should also add that, okay, so here's the comment about the ramified primes, and I should add one more thing, and that is that I forgot to look in Ulrich's paper, but I believe what's true here is that you can put N here for this. It's just that when you, so what happens is if the T has a bunch of ones and then just a little block of size 3 of this form, it's also true. So this is really a partial evidence for the UNN case. I didn't dare to put it on the slide because I didn't check carefully that he did all that counting and so on. He can probably tell me yes at the moment, but anyway. In any case, this is some evidence that, in fact, these strange generating functions are indeed coinciding, in this case at least, with these Hermitian modular forms. So now I want to talk very briefly about some other evidence. Most of this is in the case of divisors now. So we could consider R equals 1. So the genus 1 generating function, so this would be supposed to be a modular form on U11, so just an elliptic modular form, and its weight should be n, and there should be a Nabin-type character chi from the quadratic field, and so on. In any case, the general form of this thing would be this. This is the generating function with a 1 here, and so we have these divisors together with the Green's functions now. And so just to write down explicitly what the Green's functions are in this case, what you do, and now I'm evaluating at a z which lies in this particular thing. So this is why I have the uniformization, complex uniformization up there, so I can show you this formula. The point is that on the DL part of the MC, this is supposed to be a function on MC with some log singularities along some cycles. So what you do is on this piece here, you take a z, which is a negative line here. Its value at the point z is the following. You sum over all lattice vectors of length t in this lattice, and then you take 4 pi z. And you see, this vector x is not necessarily in dx, which, remember, was the subthing perp to z. Dx is part of the cycle, so if the vector, if z lies in dx for such an x, you're on the cycle and you expect a singularity. So we're going to be interested in finite values of this function, so we're interested only in those z's whose projection, which aren't perpendicular to any of these vectors. In that case, you take the component along z, take its length squared, and take this ei, where ei is the exponential integral. Now, this is one of my favorite functions. It's like a poor man's Gaussian. It looks like a Gaussian, the usual Gaussian at infinity, but it has a log pole at zero. And so anytime you wanted to, in algebraic geometry or anywhere else, to take log absolute value of something, you could take ei of it, and near zero, it behaves just like log absolute value. But at infinity, it decays very rapidly. So it has certain advantages to log. In any case, this is the explicit formula for the Green's function. And notice, by the way, as I said, that as x moves, as this z moves to a place where one of these components is zero, this will encounter that log singularity, so it blows up exactly along the cycle. Okay, so that's how you define the Green's function. Now, Ben Howard, I don't know how much time I have left. I'm getting, I have a little time, so I can say this. So these things are now functions on the open Shamir variety, and Ben checked, it's not such a trivial matter, their behavior along the compactifying divisors in this situation, and found that you can extend them to Green's function on this, the complex points of the smooth compactification, but it now has additional singularities along some boundary components. That's a curious thing. So some of the boundary components are now in the singularities of this Green's function, and he determines explicitly which ones, which have a very nice, almost modular definition of which components occur. And the coefficients, interestingly enough, depend on the parameter v. So remember, we were taking coefficients with real cycles with real coefficients. And at this moment, it's absolutely essential to do that because these coefficients here are not integers. They're depending on the parameter v, which is a real positive real number. In any case, using that, you then get classes in this Chow group as that we wanted in the beginning. So you can make these fixed guys like this. So this cycle, which has now got this extra bit of the compactifying divisors, this Green's function, which should have a star, I guess. Well, just extension. And you can make a modified generating series. Again, you might ask whether this is a modular form. Now, one piece of evidence is the fact that both this one and the one without modifications, if I hadn't done this modification here, I would be looking at cycles where I'm not taking into account what's going on at infinity, and therefore I can do them and pair them with compactly supported cohomology, which is to say take their absolute cohomology classes. If I did that with the series without the star here, what I would get is my old function with Milson, namely with values in cohomology. As if I took the image of this thing in cohomology, I would get the old modular function with Milson, which is a piece of evidence for the modularity of this. And the same thing is true in higher codimensions for the other things with Milson. So it's the image under Turing class of these things. That's one thing. The image of this one is modified, but interestingly enough, this modification was, I haven't checked the details, was more or less, I'll say more or less because I didn't check, but I'm sure it must be, in the thesis of Jim Cogdell at Yale from 1982, who was when I was considering this problem about these ball quotients. So, okay. In any case, one would like to imagine that this thing will be a modular form. So what Ben also did was he considered what happens for certain linear functionals. Now, I see, remember the point is we want to apply some linear functionals on this group to this series and see whether we get a modular form. So here's the linear functional he considered. It's very pretty. And a little more exotic than you can, than some simpler ones. You take a totally real field of degree n. Remember, n is our, we're on a un minus 1, 1 Shimura variety. And let the psi i's be its real embedding, so there are n of them. And then I take the CM field that I got by just taking the composite of this totally real field with the fixed imaginary quadratic field that we started with. And now having chosen these and numbered these real embeddings of f, I get a very natural CM type. Namely, I take the, on this field here, I take phi on the first n minus 1 of the embeddings, and I take phi bar on the last one, and that's a CM type. So you could imagine, you take now the moduli space of abelian varieties with CM, true CM by OE, and that fixed CM type. So this is a little moduli space, so this is a zero-dimensional on the generic fiber, it's an arithmetically it's a curve, and there's a natural map because of the way in which we chose the signature here. If I just forget the action of this totally real field, or part of it, the K acts by signature n minus 1, 1. And so if I simply restrict to OK this action, I get an element of the moduli problem M that we discussed earlier. So there's a natural morphism from this guy to this guy, this arithmetic curve into here. There's some base changes involved here, depending on your field. Well, actually, the reflex field of this CM type is the little field K as well. That's a nice fact feature. Oh, is it? Anyway, whatever. There's some base change, perhaps. But the main point is you get an arithmetic curve mapping in here. So if you have you get a map on chow hat 1, in contravariantly, from this one to this one. But now we're in the top degree for this, which is an arithmetic curve. So you can apply degree hat. So you get altogether a linear functional for each totally real field. Exactly. So I have this curve, and I'm going to take all these divisors and intersect. So on that curve, now I have a bunch of zero cycles, and I look at their generating function, if you like. It doesn't see anything in infinity, so all this business about the tilde and so on is irrelevant, actually. But nonetheless, I wanted to bring it in here. It's relevant if you want to actually write down this Chow group and say, yes, I have this Chow group. Right? That was the only real reason for it. So the calculations are going to be independent of anything you do there. Anyway, this is linear functional, and what Ben proves, beautifully, is that on this totally real field, F, there's an incoherent Eisenstein series of weight 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, such that, so incoherent again means that this guy will converge for real part of S bigger than 1. It's an Eisenstein series on SL2. Why did I put an N here? Sorry. This is H to the N, not H lower N. This is the usual upper half plane N copies, all right? So this is just for U1, 1 secretly. So it's for U1, 1 over the totally real field. It has parallel weight 1, and incoherent means that it's defined initially for real part of S bigger than 1. It has a meromorphic continuation, no pole at S equals 0, and vanishes at S equals 0 because it's odd. And so you can look at its central derivative and pull back to the usual upper half plane, in other words, U1, 1 over Q, from the U1, 1 over the totally real field. So that's what this delta means. I've taken a diagonally embedded element in here. Evaluate the central derivative of the diagonally embedded element, then you get indeed this generating series. So it's a modular form of weight Well, now it's weight N after I pull it back, because it was weight 111 upstairs. When I come down, the weights add. So it's now weight N, as expected. Now, what Ben also does is to actually decompose these zero cycles that Matt already pointed out. We have really these zero cycles on this curve up there according to elements of the field F. And he writes down a generating series on the field F so that this derivative without the delta is equal to the generating series of arithmetic degrees already. And afterwards, you pull it back. So that's an even better version of the theorem. And the only thing that isn't done here is that the zero term in this business hasn't been defined. And it clearly should be, for example, the Hodge bundle for the family of abelian varieties, et cetera, but that's not checked. So for the moment, in this identity here, in this generating function, we're just doing the cheat that I'm trying to avoid by simply defining this class, the zero class, to be the constant term here, because that's the only term we don't know matches. So to conclude, I think that this provides various kinds of evidence that these things are indeed modular forms. There's more things you can speculate, more things you can prove. Lots of amazingly difficult and challenging problems here, and that's the end of the talk. Right. I mean, that's one of the reasons we haven't defined it, because it's going to be the height, presumably. After all, the point is now I have this this CM abelian variety, this curve, which is mapping into the moduli space M, right? And there's this curve of CM abelian varieties with this particular CM type, CM by E, that was a composite field. So these are the abelian varieties of dimension N, and we're mapping that into the moduli space, and so the generating function on the moduli space, which we're pulling back, I believe that the constant term should involve the Hodge bundle of the family over that moduli space in some way. I mean, there's some logs of V and other things that occur in there. And so so the point is that you would like to say that that's going to be the Faltings height, or involve the Faltings height of that CM abelian variety by just some naturality property of the Hodge bundle. So the problem is, can you prove that this is a modular form? If you could prove this is a modular form directly, without knowing that the constant term, in other words, if you could define the constant term of this generating function itself, the phi hat 1, if you could define it using a Hodge bundle and so on, and prove it's modular without proving that this doing this pullback, then you would get a formula that would say, now the constant term of this guy and the constant term of that guy have to agree, and you get a formula for the faulting site. But of course, to prove that that's modular, I don't know any way of doing it. I haven't checked. Sorry. But see, I'd like to say that this is the work of Ben Howard, and I didn't check his constant term. So I think probably Tong Hao Yang has checked, and indeed, yeah, that this would be your conjecture. Of course, we have to make the full definition. There'd be some log Bs and some other garbage in the constant term, but essentially, yeah. On the integral matrix or on the V?
On the V,
I'm sorry. On the V, yeah, okay. So the point somehow, one way of thinking about it is the following. All of these cycles, if we look on the generic fiber, all of these cycles can be viewed, let's say the divisors, let's not worry about higher codimension, the divisors can all be viewed as the zeros of sections of a fixed bundle. There's just one line bundle on this thing. This is some kind of tautological bundle. And these things are just the zeros of various sections of that bundle. Okay? So now, if I put a metric on that bundle, then there's a natural Green's function attached to the zero locus of the section, namely log of the norm of the section. This is a function blowing up exactly along where the section is zero, or has a pole, but it's a holomorphic section. And so now the point is that it turns out that from the point of view of this business, and this is just heuristics, I mean, we like these things to match and so on, the metric that you put should depend on this V. So you have, in some sense, a family of metrics, depending on this parameter V. And for those metrics, then the Green's functions all depend on that because they are log norm of the sections. And then for higher codimension, you want to take iterated star products, so it's the same dependence that comes in. And as to why we put that particular dependence in the metric, the point is that we already had this old theory with Nilsson, which said that, remember the Green's equation relates DDC, the delta function, and something smooth. If you take the divisor case and you put in for the smooth thing the Schwarz function that Nilsson and I constructed, it depends on V. You solve this, and this is the function you get, this dependence.